I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio, and you're listening to The Functional Nerds. This is going to be episode number 243.
That is Patrick Hester. He's an author and a blogger and a podcaster, a Hugo Award-winning podcaster for the SF Signal podcast. You can check out his website, atfmb.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anelio. I'm a musician, composer, and a podcaster as well. You can check out my music over at johnanelio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at John Anelio. And this week we are joined by Zachary Jernigan. Zachary is the author of two books, No Return, which was AV Club put it one of the best books of 2013, and his brand new book, which just came out, which is the sequel to No Return, Shower of Stones. Both excellent books. I finished No Return, and I just started Shower of Stones, and if you are a fan of science fiction and fantasy and sort of the meeting between the two, you will love those books, and we'll get more into that later. But thank you for joining us today, Zachary.
Of course. Thank you for having me. It means a lot.
And Zachary, the most important question that we can ask you at this point is, when you're handwriting your name, Zachary, do you put the little horizontal crossbar on the Z?
You know what's funny? I do. I never used to growing up, and including the number 7. I never put the little bar on the number 7. But for some reason, as my handwriting has gotten, I think it's because my handwriting has gotten so bad as I've gotten older, and I don't know why, it's just gotten terrible, I put those in there so that people can be aware that that's a Z or that's a 7. So now
exactly. I do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Riveting, you know, riveting podcasting, John.
Yeah, yeah. This is scintillating.
I also put my slashes and zeros.
Oh, well, I don't do... I don't want to hear from you from the rest of the podcast. My goodness.
Now, do you prefer Zachary, or would you rather Zach? I don't know what you're comfortable being called.
I prefer Zach. In fact, the person who's ever called me Zachary was, I went to Stone Coast, the Stone Coast MFA program, and David Anthony Durham, a great, great author, wrote Acacia. He was one of my teachers. He's one of the only people who's ever insisted on calling me Zachary. I don't know why. I mean, just for the longest time he did, and then all of a sudden he switched over at some point. But no one called me Zachary, really.
Cool. Not even when you're in trouble?
Yeah, it was weird. Not even when I'm in trouble. I mean, my mom, I mean, it's just, she never called me Zachary. I don't know why they even named me that. No one's ever called me that.
She never just goes, Zachary Quinto Jernigan.
No, I think that would be about as far from a reference as she would make as humanly possible.
Now, you know, Patrick, I was just thinking, and I could be wrong about this, but I believe our friend Merle Lafferty studied with David Anthony Durham, and I believe it was also at the Stone Coast program. Does that ring a bell to you, Patrick?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. So I think, and now is that, do you have to actually go there physically, or is that like an online thing, Zach?
You do it online for most of the year, and then for about a little less than 2 weeks, you do what they call a residency there, where the rest of the students are there. And so that's the only two times during the year, during the winter and the summer, those are the two times that you actually are physically there. But you're right about Mer. She went there, she started, I think, right after my last semester.
And I believe that's where she met the person who created the magic spreadsheet.
I believe so.
Yeah, because I remember her telling me about that a couple of years ago when we were at Balticon together, and I remember she had really, really positive things to say about it and that she got so much in terms of learning how to write. Did you have a good experience going through that program?
I did. My experience was largely that I went for no real practical purpose, which I think if you're going to pursue writing, I think you can kind of throw out the idea of practicality, unless you're really lucky and then go ahead and spend all that money you're making. But for me, it was more, I wanted a kick in the butt to get writing, which I think is one of the main reasons that people do go, as well as to get a degree. For me, it was an incredible experience. It was a lot of fun. I really don't think I ever would have written a first novel if it hadn't been for going there. And the reason was just at a certain point, I kind of looked at myself and I was like, well, man, I need to justify my existence somehow, you know, of being here and doing this. So after a long time of telling everyone I didn't want to write a novel. I finally admitted that I wanted to do it, and it was really only because I was in that program that it happened.
Excellent. Well, you know, I want to get into your writing experience and some stuff about your novels, but let's get to our picks of the week first.
Picks of the week.
And Zach, what's your pick this week?
My pick is a book called The Iron Ship by K.M. McKinley, which I believe is a pseudonym for someone, and I don't know how to hazard a guess who it is within the science fiction and fantasy community, writing community, but it was published by Solaris, I think, within the last 2 months. It's a pretty thick book. It's about, I think, about 600 pages, and it's this epic fantasy, and I'm only about 100 pages into it, but thus far I'm reading it, and I'm thinking, my goodness, I mean, this is written incredibly well. Not say anything bad about Solaris, because I like the books that Solaris publishes, but it's one of those books where I read and I'm like, wow, this could have a huge readership if it had, you know, the kind of distribution that Tor had or Del Rey or somebody like that. But it's absolutely fantastic so far. Big cast of characters, got kind of the times kind of a new weird kind of feeling to it. But just the world building is absolutely incredible in it.
Cool. Can you give us the title and the author one more time so our listeners can go and check it out?
Sure. It's The Iron Ship by K.M. McKinley.
Excellent. I believe I have an e-arc of that.
Really?
Because I've, you know, go through NetGalley and a lot of the, because we do the podcast, a lot of the publishers, you know, sort of send me e-arcs to stuff. And I feel like I have, mm-hmm. I have a copy of that's hanging out. So I'll have to like push that to the top of the e-arc pile that I have. Cool. Very good. My pick this week is The Sword-Edged Blonde by Alex Bledsoe.
That's a great book.
I really liked it. You know, Alex is one of those authors who I've been friendly with online for quite a few years. Tor has sent me several of his books over the years, and you know, it's hard to read everything that's out there, you know. And I believe with this book, Patrick, I don't know if you have a copy of this, because this book came out quite a few years ago now, actually. And they were giving away copies of this at the World Fantasy that we went to.
Oh.
So, you know, you got like a big bag of books that year. So that was in the big bag of books that year that World Fantasy was in Columbus, Ohio. So this book has been sitting on my shelf for like over 5 years now, or something like that, at least anyway. And it's one of those ones I'm like, yeah, I bet I'd like that. And I did. it's the first in a series. I think there's like five or six books in that series now, and it's a cross between fantasy and a crime novel. It's like sort of like a private detective sort of tone, you know, sort of in that first person. So it's a really cool fusion of those two genres. And so if you like kind of crime novels and you like fantasy and sort of that idea intrigues you, I think you'd like it. It's similar in tone, I would say, to the Jim Butcher books. I've read now the first two Jim Butcher Dresden novels. So obviously that's in a, you know, urban fantasy Chicago. But in terms of like the protagonist, you know, sort of tough guy, private eye sort of guy, but with sort of supernatural elements. Yeah, it's really good. I really enjoyed it. So that is my pick, The Sword-Edged Blonde by Alex Bledsoe. Patrick, what's your pick this week?
My pick is BBC's The Musketeers Season 1.
Hmm.
I have had this, actually the DVDs, for quite some time now. And I finally, with my ear infections and not feeling well and just having to take it easy over the course of a weekend, I was laying on the couch and I thought, I got to do something. So I popped those in, and it turned out being a really, really great show. I liked it a lot. It's obviously changing up some stuff from the books, and but there's been so many versions of the Three Musketeers, right? Over the course of the last 60, 70 years as people have made films and television shows and different things. And this one, I really liked it. It was very compelling, and it had a nice story arc. It was the typical BBC, you know, 10 to 13 episodes, something like that. And it was fun. I really enjoyed it.
Cool. Cool. So it's just called The Musketeers?
The Musketeers. Yep.
Awesome. Cool.
But everybody's there. Athos, Porthos, Aramis, D'Artagnan. I actually work with a guy whose name is Aramis now. He's in our customer service department at work. And I walked up and said, are they ever going to hire your brothers? He says, my brothers? I said, yeah, Porthos and Athos. And he looked at me. He's like, no one has ever made that joke before.
Yeah. All right. Well, Zach, you know, the first question I want to ask you, because, you know, if you go to your website, one of the first things that it says in your bio is that you're a journalist. So maybe you could talk a little bit, if you don't mind, about obviously so you're writing as your job. That's your job. So how does being a journalist and being a novelist, how do those two disciplines play into each other for you?
Well, first off, I've only been a journalist for less than a year, maybe 8 months. I never really considered journalism as a career. I think just for whatever reason, it just never occurred to me. I don't know why, but when I got this, my wife alerted me to the fact that this position was open, and I applied for it and then got it. And I remember when I was sitting with my wife and my mother-in-law, well, who would be my mother-in-law. I just got married about a month and a half ago.
Congrats.
No, thank you. My would-be mother-in-law, she was sitting there and she goes, this is so great. I mean, this is you'll write at work and then this will give you so much inspiration for writing. And I remember looking over at Sophia and she kind of had this look on her face like, what? Because she thought the same thing as me. I was kind of like, do you know anybody who's a massage therapist? And they go home and they're like, man, I just want a massage.
That's a Seinfeld episode.
yeah, exactly. Or like a cook that comes home. I mean, I know people who are in relationships with cooks and they're like, I hate it because she comes home and she never cooks anything for me. And I'm like, well, why would she? She did that all day. And so I would say one of the biggest struggles has really been the realization that I do think my writing is getting better as a result of doing it. I think it's just, I think I've become more efficient of a writer, but I'll tell you, by the time I get home, the last thing I want to do is sit in front of a computer. So that's been a bit of a challenge. But as far as the style of writing that you have to write in as a journalist has definitely informed my writing, because there just isn't a lot of space for anything in a newspaper story. So that has really made my writing much more efficient, I think, because like most people who write science fiction and or fantasy, I think there's an urge to, when you're world building, to really explain things. And for me, I get kind of obsessive compulsive about it. And I'm like, am I missing anything? And the realization is kind of like, well, if I'm missing something, that's kind of my opinion. As long as there's enough to propel the story forward, the reader doesn't really care all that much. I mean, of course, you'll have some readers who are like, why didn't you explain the mechanics of this or whatever? But for the most part, if you're telling a story efficiently, they're not going to care that much that you didn't explain all that kind of stuff that was in you that you felt needed to be explained.
Well, I was, you know, that was one of the things I was going to mention about your two novels is that, considering the depth of the world building in it, by fantasy standards, they, at least in terms of page count, they are on the shorter side. They're much more concise novels. Mm-hmm. They're both under 300 pages, which is, I mean, now they're both hardcover, so the pages are bigger, so I don't know what the exact word counts are on them compared to some other stuff, but that's on the short side for a fantasy novel.
It is.
But it doesn't feel short. It doesn't feel like it's lacking the world building. If anything, there over the course of the two novels, there is quite a mythos built and a history built that just sort of springs naturally out of the characters. And so I wanted to compliment you on that, because that I think that's a tough thing to do.
Well, thank you. No, that means the world to me. I mean, it's the hard thing. The hard thing for me to do, well, there's many hard things for me to do. Writing to me is very difficult. But one of the things that I like shorter novels. I have a hard time really gripping into longer novels. And I think it's just because probably I have a short attention span. And as well, I just tend to want to move on to new things quickly. And so for me, when I'm writing, I want all of that stuff. I want all that feeling of immersion and everything. But at the same time, I want, when I'm reading, I want the other author to do it quickly. I want them to do it efficiently. I've never been one of these people that has an easy time getting through 10 pages of description about the world. Even if I find it fascinating, to me, my mind is going to wander.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm the same way, I think, because I like long novels, but I'll be honest, like the reason why I went right into book two, your publicist was kind enough to send me both books, Martin Cahill, I should mention him, he sent me lots of good stuff, was that I actually bought No Return. It was a Kindle Daily deal probably like a year or two ago. So I bought it. And I if there's something that I find interesting that's on sale, I usually just buy it because I'll eventually want to get to it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wanted to get you on the show, so I'm like, oh, I should finally read this. And I actually have the hardcover here too, and I went and bought the audiobook as well because it syncs, and I've been doing that a lot lately, as our listeners mm-hmm. know. That's so I got through the first book and really enjoyed it, and I wasn't planning on going right into the second book because I knew I wouldn't finish it in time for our interview. But when I picked mm-hmm. up, I'm like, oh, it's only 235 pages. Ah, let's go right into this. This, you know, the length was why I went right into it. Whereas if mm-hmm. it was over 500 pages, I probably been like, I'll get to that later. I'll want to get onto something else. So to me, sure. length of book really does affect what I choose to read. Patrick, how about you? Like, does length sort of influence what you'll pick up to read?
So I'm the opposite. When I'm reading a physical book, I'm mm-hmm. looking for the big, thick doorstop. Mm-hmm. I love those. I mean, that's why I'm a fan mm-hmm. of Robert Jordan, and why I when he was still writing books, I was a fan of George R. R. Martin. Mm-hmm. And so I will look for those big, thick books. I love Kate Elliott for that. You know, she does that. J.B. Jones mm-hmm. does that. She has these big, thick books. With ebooks and audiobooks, it's interesting. Ebooks, I don't even notice it because I'm just, it's like, oh, that looks cool. I buy it. Mm-hmm. And then I read it. Audiobooks, if I see that the audiobook is less than 10 hours, I'm pissed that I'm spending a credit on it.
That's interesting. Yeah, because Audible is a, you know, you what is it, like $15 for one book a month? Is that how
yeah.
it works?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because most of my audiobook, well, all of my audiobook listening has been whatever I get as a companion to an ebook that I already bought. And mm-hmm. so a lot of times what I'm spending on the audiobook is a very discounted price. A lot of times it's like between like $4 and $10.
Well, yeah, but like last night I was looking for an audiobook, and I was looking in my wish list and some prices had changed. Well, mm-hmm. I have a credit. And one of the books that I wanted is on sale right now for like $2.99. It's like ridiculous. Well, I'm not going to spend my $15 credit on a $2.99 audiobook.
Yeah, sure.
I'm sorry, sure. I can't do it. So I do when it comes to audiobooks, I look at length. I want to see how long the books are because I want to get the most bang for my $15 that I spend.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I think it's – you know, I'm in a we are in a different position now. And Zach, do you get a lot of books? You know, being an author yourself, do you get ARCs and other things for blurbs sent to you?
I do sometimes. Honestly, the two books that I've blurbed so far, I honestly got in touch with the publishers. One of them was my publisher, and then the other one was Shezine, or however you pronounce that publication. I never know, but I actually contacted them because I'd really liked the two authors, Brent Hayward and John Love.
John Love has put out a lot of stuff.
Well, he's only got like maybe three books out now, I think.
I feel like I've seen a lot from John Love because I've gotten some ARCs.
Really? He only has two books as far as I'm aware.
Wow, I feel like I've gotten more than that.
Well, you might have gotten an ARC and then a finished copy, and if you've got that,
yeah, that's books, possible. Sometimes you do that, yeah.
Yeah, because I got his stuff too. Because is John on Nightshade? Zach?
Yeah, he wrote a book called Faith that was this really dark space opera, which I loved, but I could definitely see somebody being, you know, opinion being polarized about it. And then he wrote his second book called Evensong, which is the one I blurbed, mm-hmm. which is a kind of cyberpunky kind of political thriller book, which was very, very interesting.
I read that book, and part of it was I saw your blurb on it. So again, I think Martin probably sent me that one too. And I was,
probably.
You know, looking through the stack, and I'm like, oh, I know Zach, and like he blurbed it, and this looks cool, and it was different. I loved it. Yeah, it was
so,
really
so
cool.
I'm curious. So Zach, you have blurbed a couple. John, have you ever been asked to blurb a book?
No.
You know, I have, and it tripped me out.
Cool.
So there is a book out there that has a little blurb for me, and it says, you know, Patrick Hester, sfsignal.com.
Cool. What book is it? Is it out already? Or?
Yeah, it's one of Travis Heerman's Ronin books.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah, I thought of contacting someone because I read Brian Staveley's second book, and I really like – I think Brian Staveley is in terms of your kind of traditional epic fantasy – I put him up there with anybody right now. I think his first two books in that series are excellent. Like if you like a really, I mean, there's it's a modern take on it too, but it's like if you sort of like those beats of a traditional epic fantasy, I think those are among the best stuff being published right now. I think they're kind of, I know they're getting publicized decently, but I feel like that deserves a wider readership. Mm-hmm. When I was done with that, I sort of had a blurb all planned out. I'm like, I should send this to Tor. They sent me all these books. I'm like, I should offer to blurb book three. So maybe I'll do that. So you're only getting a couple of these. Cause I was going to say, I think what happens is when you get a lot of stuff sent to you, you know, it's, I think if you're paying for everything, then yes, you'll probably go for a longer book to get more bang for the buck. But I'm in a very, you know, what I would consider a fortunate position where I get so many books sent to me that length isn't really a big deal because, you know, I mean, I still buy a lot of my own books. I still buy tons of stuff. I buy tons of ebooks. I buy tons of audiobooks, and I still buy some paper books too. But, you know, I am fortunate that I'm sort of drowning in books. So I just read what looks the most interesting. So.
Well, I do occasionally feel kind of bad for asking for, you know, and again, I mean, maybe my publisher doesn't want me to say this, but, you know, I do feel kind of bad for not writing, having written two bigger books. So let me ask you guys your opinion on this. And I recently was talking to my publisher about putting out an omnibus edition of No Return and Shower of Stones together instead of just a paperback edition of Shower of Stones. Because to me, I kind of like the idea of somebody being able to read the two books together without having to pay for both of them. And because to me, I really do think that if it's possible to have to give readers the opportunity to read as much as they possibly can, I think that's good. And so to me, I think that length does determine a lot for people, especially when people are faster readers. Like me, I'm a very slow reader. You know, I mean, I read maybe a book a month, which is less than I used to, but I've always been a slow reader. And so for me, length isn't as much of an issue because I'm a slow reader anyways. But for people, for a lot of people, especially people who are big readers, I mean, they'll read 2, 3, 4, 5 books a month.
Oh, so you've heard of Sarah.
Like a superpower.
Yeah, do you know Sarah Chorn over at Bookworm Blues? She reads a...
Oh, yes, I know.
Over 200 books last year. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh,
so to answer your question, at least from my perspective, I have bought trilogies in ebook form. Like when they bundle them all together and they say, you know, get the first three books or get the trilogy. I have done that before because it's a good deal. And B, it gets me all three books and I don't have to mess with it. And I can just read them one after the other. And I have done that. You know, I did that with the Parasol Protectorate. I've done it with some other books. So I like that idea. Now, if you're – the two books are standalone in that they, you know, they tell a complete story and then you put them together, I don't have a problem with that. If you have to have read book one to read book two, I don't know. That always is a little weird to me.
Yeah.
To omnibus it with if you have to read one
like
and two.
I got into it a little bit with Vandermeer over that because, you know, I had read Annihilation and had absolutely no intention, still to this day have no intention of reading the other two books. And when I found out there was an omnibus, I'm like, well, the first one doesn't feel like a complete story to me, so I'm wondering now if the three together are supposed to tell the entire story. And Vandermeer was very kind and he sent me an email. He's like, no, they're the three don't tell like one complete story. They are three separate stories. So And so I get it. Those are short books. And I think it does make sense to put them together and go out as an omnibus. So if you feel like I think it could actually get you more sales. Let me put it that way. I think it could get more people interested in your book to put the two together and sell them as an omnibus.
Yeah, no, that was kind of my argument. I mean, one of the things about being an author or writer that I hadn't, or maybe had anticipated, but I think it's hard to anticipate this. I think it's just like anticipating any big thing like parenthood or anything. You know, you can anticipate it, but really, do you know what's going to happen? Part of it that I've had a hard time anticipating is just the amount of kind of sell, and I knew selling yourself and how much at times I would enjoy it and then other times how much I would just loathe it doing it. And to me thus far, dealing with publishers has been great, even though Nightshade has been through these issues. It's been great and I've enjoyed communicating with them. But at the same time, there are definitely times, especially when I put my foot in my mouth and somebody on Reddit is complaining about me, or which has happened several times now, where I'm kind of like, I wish I just didn't have to feel this urge to market myself and to be out there.
And Zach,
dumb things sometimes.
And Zach, that's interesting. That is something that. So I go to Pikes Peak Writers Conference and I talk to people. I'm like at that, I don't know, in between part of my writing career where I'm not quite majorly published but I've had some short stories out there and so I'm in this middle. But I talk to a lot of people and that is, I'm a marketing guy. That's what I do in the day, right? And by night, of course, I'm Batman.
Call me Batman.
From now on, I'll call you Batman, okay?
And during the day, it's all about marketing. And so people will look at my, and I hate to use the word online presence, but they do. They look at my online presence and they see that, you know, I have, you know, I'm doing really well on Twitter and Facebook. And I, you know, I do all this stuff and I'm out there and I'm selling myself and I'm talking and I'm, you know, just keeping people interested in me. And there are people who don't want to do that. It's something that comes up at every one of these writers' conferences, and when I go to writers' groups, and when I go to all these different things like Lighthouse and all this other stuff here locally in Denver, you have people who just want to write the book and they don't want to deal with the marketing side.
Right.
My opinion on this and my feeling on this, just from looking at the industry and talking to folks like yourself, is I don't see that happening anymore. That is the exception, not the norm.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
The norm is you will get support from your publisher. They will do certain things. They have a marketing plan for you. Part of that marketing plan is, Zach, you need to go to this convention, this convention, this convention. We're going to send you to this bookstore, and this bookstore. You know, you're going to be on this podcast. You're going to go on blah, 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 blah. And so there is things that you have to do as the author. And I get it. It can be uncomfortable. It can be overwhelming. There are going to be days when you're not going to want to do it.
Well, I mean, the funny thing is that I very like this, doing this, like I love doing things like this. I going to conventions, I also love. It's mostly, how do I describe this? There is this feeling that, and again, you know, being that we're on this podcast and that certain people go out of their way to try to avoid the controversy that is everywhere, I admire that. Like, I admire that people stop themselves from saying things. This is kind of the issue, is that I think now, with everything being as politicized as it is, and I'm a political creature, I like talking about these things, but there is this feeling that you must be a voice for something.
Sure.
And that's the part that bugs me probably the most, is just this feeling that, and I've largely kind of stopped at this point, but this feeling that you must speak about everything. And that would be the biggest thing that bothers me about this kind of marketing push, is the best way to actually market yourself is just to be like a nice person, you know, and to be engaging and to be enthusiastic about what you do. And for the longest time, I bought into this kind of idea as well, that I had to be loud and I had to be express all of my opinions all the time. And that would be the biggest thing that bugs me about this current message, is that you have to be involved in everything. No, you don't. You can just sure. be nice and do things like this.
And that's part of John and I don't get into that stuff. John, yeah. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But
no, you're right, yeah.
We don't get into it. And when we do the podcasts here and when I do stuff at SF Signal, we always start off with our three rules. Our three rules of podcasting are: we're not going to talk about politics, we're not going to talk about religion, mm-hmm. and we're not going to talk about barbecue, because those are the three most polarizing topics in this country. Talking about them won't win you any fans. All it'll do is segment your potential audience, 50% for you, 50% against you. And of course, Yankees get barbecue wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let me state flat out, I mean, I'm saying this now, but I mean, this is kind of a hard one kind of thing for me to realize. I mean, I still open my mouth more often than I should. So don't think that by me saying this, I'm sitting here saying, like, look at all these people doing this. I still do it. I still get drawn into all of this stuff.
Sure.
But I see how destructive it kind of is, not only to your career, to kind of run your mouth off all the time, and how little it endears you to so many people. But as well, there's a certain point where you do kind of just, despite the fact that you have to market yourself, I think for me, I kind of want to stop and be like, you know, this is getting in the way of people reading my work. Like, why did I start doing this in the first place? It was to communicate not things about me personally, but things about me personally through my fiction.
Sure. And part of the problem, Zach, is that social media has broken down the walls between reader and author.
Oh, true, entirely.
And so what used to be, you could write a letter and you could mail it off to a publisher, and then the publisher would forward it to the agent, and the agent would forward mm-hmm. it eventually to the author, and 6 months to a year later, the author would have the letter that you wrote them, and then maybe they would read it, maybe they would write something back, and they would send it back. Mm-hmm. That's all gone now, and now you can go, I'm going to look up Zachary Jernigan online. I'm going to look for his Twitter and his Facebook, and I'm going to go and I'm going to talk to him. And mm-hmm. and so that's what's caused what you're talking about. It's like, now people are, well, I used to have my personal, and then I had my business, and now it's all kind of blended together, and I'm doing everything on this account. And now what you're also seeing is kind of a throwback to, well, this is my public account, and now I'm going to have a private account.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard our three rules. I get criticized for our three rules quite a bit. I get people who want me to talk about political stuff. And I've gotten a lot of emails over the Hugo stuff about people wanting me to take a stand or take a side. And actually, that's the words that have been used in the emails. Choose a side and choose it publicly. And I haven't done any of that. And, you know, I've maintained that there are much smarter people than I who are out there talking about this stuff, and there's nothing I can add to the conversation. So, but it's out there, and it's something that people feel like they need to comment on, and I don't feel like I need to comment on it, so I don't. And yes, there are people who criticize. There are people who want to do podcasts that are heavily influenced by their personal politics. I'm not one of them. I don't do that. And that's mm-hmm. been something that John and I have tried to maintain throughout everything that we've done on Functional Nerds.
Well, and what blows my mind is that's your rule, Patrick. Like, I don't understand why somebody would have a problem with this, just as I don't understand why somebody – this is one of the things that blows my mind, is how personal everyone takes someone else's sure. opinion. Now, bear in mind, if there are certain authors that I don't read because I don't like their attitude, they don't like their politics, and they're from both sides of the political spectrum. Honestly, there are people. Mm-hmm. But the honest fact of the matter is that I'm not going to get super... I'm not going to take their work, I'm not going to take them super personally. Like, it's just... It's not as if I'm making this choice and then I'm like, I need to make an enemy. I think the funny thing is that everyone takes everyone else's perspective so personally. And when you're talking about the breakdown between the author and the audience, I'm shocked by how some of the things that, and I don't want to break your rules, so please tell me if I'm going too far with this. I'm not going to get anything specific. I'm just saying I'm shocked sometimes by how much somebody has taken something that I said and went, wow, I hate this guy now. And I'm kind of like, really, me? Like, why would you possibly care what I think? I mean, really, who, and I think some of it does have to do with the fact that I am perceived as an author and thus some sort of authority figure. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, I mean, you have just as powerful a voice as I have. And I mean, I understand kind of where that comes from, but who cares? I mean, if I say something, just write me off.
In marketing, we have a term called personas. Personas is where we basically are profiling people. And within personas can be influencers. And so there are people who are perceived as influencers, and their opinions matter. They influence other people, and therefore there are other folks out there who want those influencers to agree with them and say the right things and kind of push those messages out and influence other people. And so that's basically the core of it. And it's not necessarily that people are doing that consciously. They're not thinking about personas and influencers and that.
Mm-hmm.
They're just seeing, hey, here's such and such who has this huge platform. I really wish that they would talk about the problems that I'm having on my block with cherry trees.
Sure.
And I can't believe that they're not doing that. Why aren't they talking about the cherry tree problem? The cherry tree problem is so huge in my neighborhood.
No, and I totally get what you're saying. It's just funny. I mean, I think some of the people have been angry with me because they think, well, he's a new author and he's, you know, getting too big for his britches or something. And I can understand that, too. I mean, I do understand all that. I think it's kind of goofy. But to me, I don't like these systems, despite knowing that they exist. I don't like these systems that promote one voice so much more. I mean, I'll use an example. I mean, you know, many people have argued before, say it's Stephen King or Patrick Rothfuss or anybody you can point to who has a large following. I don't know why I picked those two, perfectly friendly people. But, you know, who will, if you're getting an argument with them about this author, they will say, well, you know, this person has sold this many millions of books. You don't know what you're talking about.
Sure.
And to me, I look at it and I go, but I mean, I know people who are just as good writers as they are. They may be unpublished currently, but they know just as much about writing as those people do. Like, I know they do. Like, I know they have just as good advice to give you or me about writing. The things that Patrick Rothfuss, for instance, and again, I'm not criticizing Patrick Rothfuss. He's a very nice guy, does charities and everything. So this is not a criticism of him at all. But the thing that he can give great advice about is probably having been a success. Now, he can give great advice about that because he's been through that. But as far as actually writing advice, man, you can take writing advice from anyone who you really respect. And so I think that's something that bothers me, is that certain voices are elevated because of their success, or certain voices are, you know, demoted because they haven't achieved that amount of success. And I can't remember what my point was when I went out to say this, but
well,
there are good things about this democratization of things, despite that there are problems that there's this breakdown between readers and writers. At the same time, there's so much great advice out there from people, and I don't kind of like that certain voices are valued so much more than others, and thus they feel pressure to comment on everything. Like, I mean, it's not fair that somebody would get angry at you, Patrick, or you, John, because you have influence, and say you need to take a stand on all this stuff. You know, you have influence. That doesn't mean that you have to be a voice box for every single issue.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, we could, we got the heavy stuff there, but unfortunately, we're
sorry.
I think it's great. It's good for us to get into that stuff. But we are running out of time.
We actually ran over.
We ran over, but that's fine. But you know, we'll have to have Zach on again at some point and continue on with this stuff. Zach, so once again, so it's Zach's website is ZacharyJernigan.com, and he's got two books out, No Return, and the brand new one is Shower of Stones, and I'm very much enjoying both of those. So you should all go and check that out. Anything else you want to let people know about before we wrap it up today, Zach?
Because I didn't really mention my books, which I probably should have. Again, another thing my agent's probably going to be like, if he listens to this, like, Zach, did you feel at any point an urge to talk about things that you do? No, I mean, I have a short story collection that will be coming out next year in spring through Ragnarok Publications. That's currently untitled, but I'm excited about that. And it's basically, I'm just very grateful to be here and to have people plugging my book. It means the world, and just reading it mostly. I mean, that means the most.
Well, I've really enjoyed them so far. So no problem at all. I really dug it. So yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So for me, you could just check out my music over at johnanilio.com and follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And Patrick, you?
Usual stuff for me, John. I am at atfmb.com. I am going to be at Worldcon. I'm trying to think of the timing of this episode. I might already be at Worldcon when this episode goes live. Who knows? You should come see me at Worldcon. I actually am doing an author reading. So it'll be the schedule is first there's an author puking. And then there's an author reading, and then there's the author puking out what's left of his stomach. So I think that's the way that the author reading is structured. So I will be doing that at Worldcon. I encourage people to come see me and say hello.
Very good. All right, everybody. Zach, thanks again for coming on, and everyone else, we'll see you next time.
Thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?